Israel is resting in the balance. Both Germany and Russia are reinventing their past, as is Turkey. And that entire world is coming together as Russia and Turkey are developing bilateral relations. Who knows? Will this be the fulfillment of Ezekiel 38 and 39? Bring that confederation together over oil and gas against Israel to take a spoil. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Thanks for joining us. Become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. God bless you and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be those of Pastor David Whitney of the Institute on the Constitution. And we're going to be talking about the American Constitution and why it is so important. It is important because it established a republic, not a democracy. And when you hear our leaders talking about the American democracy, we are a democracy, they are either ignorant or lying to you. The Constitution is an amazing document because it established a government that where the power was to be limited by law. And as Thomas Jefferson said so well, speak not to be of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And of course, John Locke had said 100 years before, that government governs best that governs the least. And it was upon those concepts that our government, federal government, was established. Well, certainly the current administration, the members of it, don't believe in the Constitution, which they've sworn to uphold. They want to regulate every aspect of society. There's nothing in the Constitution that allows a federal mandated health care or federal mandated education. There's nothing in the Constitution that allows America to go to war because we don't like the government in another country, because believe me, we did not attack Afghanistan because they attacked us, because 15 of the 19 terrorists who supposedly attacked the World Trade Center came from Saudi Arabia. So why didn't we attack Saudi Arabia instead of attacking Afghanistan? Of course, they blame it on Osama bin Laden. He's been dead for years. Why are we still fighting there? It is all about a global government, the American Empire. And the people who control our president believe in the American Empire and believe in a world government. And that is totally contrary to my and your Constitution. Well, with that as a background, let's get Pastor David Whitney pick up the story. Because if we don't restore the Constitution, then the America we know will soon become simply a remembrance of things past. Good evening, David.
Dr. Stan, it's a blessing and privilege to be on your show and to share these truths because, as you say, it's absolutely essential that we understand what our Constitution said and what it means, not what has been misinterpreted to mean or what has been twisted to mean by primarily the courts, but certainly Congress and the executive branch have weighed in on twisting the Constitution around. But we need to understand what it meant to those who actually penned these words, what it meant to those who ratified these in the original states, because to understand that is essential if we're going to restore the republic. The only way we can do it is to put out of office those who will not abide by the true intent of the Constitution. As you mentioned, the current administration is a perfect example of that. But we need to restore the Constitution by, first of all, educating millions of Americans. Americans, by and large, have not studied the Constitution. They do not know what it actually says. Instead, they've listened to the lying talking heads and professors of law and so forth that have created a system that's completely contrary to that designed by our founders. The Constitutional Republic is still restorable if the American people will study it, wake up, and demand that those who are in office either abide by the Constitution or get out of office, or we'll remove them from office.
All right, will you hold that thought, David? We'll be back here in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney from the Institute on the Constitution. David, you're right ahead.
Well, last time we were together, we were discussing Article 2, easy way to remember what the first three articles of our Constitution are about. Article 1 deals with the legislative branch, Congress, composed of two houses, House and Senate, and then the executive branch, the presidency, and the offices related to it, and the cabinet departments and all, are dealt with in Article 2. Article 3 addresses the judiciary, and we had mentioned that as they designed the chief executive, they did so in light of some of the weaknesses that were apparent in the Articles of Confederation, one of which there was no chief executive at all in the Articles of Confederation. They laid out the terms would be a four-year term, originally no term limit, because they noted that President of the Continental Congress, who was George Washington, that everybody expected to be the first president, that he voted against the idea of a term limit on the president, and so it was proposed, and then it was voted down, but actually the two terms for President Washington, when he served them and he finished the second term, that was enough. He didn't want to go on in serving in that capacity. And it sort of established a unwritten tradition that presidents only served two terms, so maximum of 8 years. That was until Franklin himself, the devil, Roosevelt, one of the worst presidents we've had, was reelected for four terms, and he died as a blessing, really, to all of America in his fourth term, 1945, and shortly after that, an amendment was put forward that ultimately was ratified, the 22nd Amendment, limiting the president to just two terms, which I think is a wise thing, particularly considering the damage done by most presidents to our Constitutional Republic, the 43rd president. Well, it would have been worse if we'd had him more than 8 years, and on the list goes back from him. Of presidents that have damaged, destroyed, or severely injured our Constitutional Republic. Two terms is more than enough, unfortunately. Well, the way of which a president is elected is not what people commonly think. They commonly think we go to the polls in November, we cast our votes, and by popular majority, the president is elected. And that's why many people are puzzled by this idea of the Electoral College that is really what takes place in the election of the president. We elect, technically, electors in the Electoral College who then cast a vote for the president. And many people think this is the weirdest thing in the world. Well, it is a direct reflection of the Republican, small r, Republican form of government designed by our founders, that we are represented in elections, and we elect representatives. The second aspect of this is that electors were to be chosen, that is, while we vote for the electors...
Hold that thought, David. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Pastor Whitney was just talking about how our president is elected. We vote really for electors, not directly for the president. We vote for electors, then, who will elect the president. And, of course, this system was set up so that the... you could have the majority of people voting for a presidential candidate, but since the electors represent the states and state interests, why sometimes a person with a smaller number of votes could become the president? Because they did not believe in majority rule. The senators at that time were to be elected by the states, not by the people. Why? Because, of course, when you have direct election of senators by the people, why first the people don't elect him? The people who put up the big bucks for the senator's campaign elect him and control him, and that, unfortunately, is what happened with the 17th Amendment. That's why they wanted to begin moving us 100 years ago away from these concepts of a republic to a democracy, because as Plato had said so well in his book, The Republic, democracies always decline into dictatorships. Go right ahead, David.
So you're right to actually draw a parallel between the senators being appointed by the state legislatures, which basically gave state legislatures a powerful control over Congress. Congress could not pass one piece of legislation without it actually being considered by the state legislatures, and those state legislatures then informing their senator that they appointed and they could remove at will, informing them how they wanted them to vote. So in a parallel respect, the president was elected through the legislators. It wasn't the legislators themselves, but people chosen through the legislative process of each state to serve as electors. So this was a state check upon the executive branch, giving the states a direct stake and direct control in who would become president. Now, the electors are equal to for each state are equal to the total number of senators and congressmen from that state, so even the smallest of states will have 3 electors, and this actually gives the smaller states, in terms of population, those smaller states greater weight in the Electoral College than they would have by a popular majority vote. And this is a good design. They recognize that the smaller states may be disadvantaged in national elections because of their small size. They could get easily overlooked, but by giving them greater weight through having a minimum of three electors, it gives them more power in the entire process and a greater stake. So, again, they were looking out for the little guy in this sense of the smaller states. Now, the electors are normally pledged to support the candidate who carried their state. That's currently how it's done. But back in the old days, before about the 1830s, it was not winner-take-all in the state. Instead, it was each congressional district, as the vote went in that congressional district, you had one elector connected directly to that congressional district. As that congressional district went, so the elector's vote would be cast, which meant in a state you could have a divided group of electors in terms of one part of the electors casting their vote for one presidential candidate, another for another presidential candidate, and perhaps if there was 3 presidential candidates, you might even have an elector or more casting votes for that. So it was never a winner-take-all until about the 1830s, when the power brokers in the big cities began to realize, hey, they could control this whole thing. All they need to do is a winner-take-all strategy in the state, and they, in the city, especially cities like Chicago and so forth, with their machine, they could produce exactly whatever result the powers that be wanted them to produce in the entire state. So the state of Illinois really is controlled by the votes that are cast in Chicago, and the small congressional districts around the state virtually have no voice than in the presidential election, because we have shifted to a winner-take-all. Not impossible to shift back. The state of Maine currently follows this pattern of each congressional district, that congressional district, as it votes as a congressional district, so its elector is pledged to support that candidate. And I believe the other state is Nebraska out west that does the same. So it's possible to return, and I think that would be a far fairer way in which presidential elections would be conducted. My state of Maryland, there's a huge liberal swath down the middle between the city of Baltimore and the city of Washington, D.C., but much of the eastern and western sides of the state are very conservative. But because they're not the population centers, they don't have the bulk of the population, and when it comes to presidential election, all 10 of our electors always go to the Democrats. It wouldn't be that way if the congressional districts were empowered to vote directly and their elector was pledged to vote that way. Well, the other aspect of this, the electors are normally pledged to support the candidate, but they do have permission to violate that pledge again if they see that the popular vote is going the wrong way. The majority is wrong in choosing a man who's unworthy of office, or maybe a man who's disqualified for office, maybe a man who doesn't meet the constitutional qualifications. The electors can say, you know, the people voted this way, but I'm sorry to say they're wrong in this, and therefore the electors could vote in a different direction than they normally would be pledged to vote. Now, if in an electoral college no candidate receives a majority, then the race actually goes to Congress. The House of Representatives chooses the president. Each state would cast one vote in the House of Representatives, and the majority of that state's congressional representatives, as they desired, so their state vote would be cast. And it's chosen from the top three vote-getters in the Electoral College that would be considered for president by the House. And then the Senate would choose the vice president. Only it would be different in how they vote. It would be one vote per senator from the top two names that arose in the Electoral College.
And I would simply point out that at one time we had more than two parties. What they have done, those people who want a dictatorship, established a two-party system for all intents and purposes. We have a lot of smaller parties, but already it's two parties. And if you can control both political parties, there is no opposition. And this is what Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, brings out so well in his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, on page 1247, 1248, where he points out that what you really want to do is have two political parties just the same, so the people could go to the polls every 4 years thinking that they're going to throw the rascals out. But, of course, both political parties are controlled by the same people, have essentially the same goals, even though they pretend to be arguing back and forth, and, of course, nothing changes. That's the way the system really works, and it was never intended to work that way.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Well, I believe we could restore that if we were to, and it's a legislation decision that can be made in each state, to restore the electors to their congressional districts, so that third-party candidates able to rally support in a particular congressional district of the state, they would have a stake in the Electoral College that currently they're blocked out of it altogether. Well, then we go to the qualifications that Article 2, Section 1 lays out for the president. The president first must be a natural-born citizen. Some debate about what this meant took place here in the last presidential election. John McCain, people questioned whether he was natural born because he was not born on the American soil. Said he was born in Panama under the military district there in Panama. And then certainly Obama. There's great question about where he was born. There's been a reluctance to release his birth certificate so people can actually physically examine it and so on. And maybe that he was born in Hawaii. Maybe that he was not born in Hawaii, but was born in some foreign country. So there's a question there about natural-born citizen regarding the current resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But there's an argument, a far better argument than those that just presented, that has been offered by a constitutional scholar and constitutional attorney, Herb Titus. And actually, if people go to our website, iotconline.com, that's the website for Institute on the Constitution, iotconline.com, and look down there on the first page and find the link. There's a link to several First Fridays that we have done recently that we've put up on Ustream, that people can watch them on Ustream. But the link is there, and look for the title that says Peruca Titus DiLorenzo Lectures, now available on Ustream. And you can click that link and select the Herb Titus Lecture, where he does an excellent job of showing what our founders believed this phrase natural-born citizen actually meant. It meant to our founders, and he presents the evidence far better than I can, so I'll let people go to that resource and check it out at iotconline.com, that a natural-born citizen, according to our founders, is one who both parents were citizens. Both parents, both father and mother, were citizens of these United States. Therefore, obviously, John McCain would be qualified because both parents were citizens, even though he was not born on American soil. And Obama, nobody at all claims that his father was ever an American citizen. In fact, I remember looking at his website during the campaign, and he kind of boasted that he claimed a dual citizenship because his father was a British citizen of Kenya. And as a British citizen, when your child is born, they have citizenship rights. And so he was kind of claiming he's a dual citizen of Britain and of the United States. So according to our founders, Herb Titus would argue, and I think he presents a very powerful argument. I'll let other people look at that and evaluate it for themselves. He presents, a reasonable argument that the current resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue does not qualify to be president according to this standard of natural-born citizen. Well, the next element of that is, of course, he must be 35 years old and have been a resident of the United States for at least 14 years. They didn't want one who was, yes, a natural-born citizen, but had spent very little time in our country to become president. He would not be familiar with the issues, nor with the culture. He would basically be a foreigner, even though he would have the legal status as a citizen of these United States.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back with David in just a moment, right here at the Radio Liberty Network. And, of course, these are all important things. You need to know what the Constitution says if we hope to preserve our freedom. David, go right ahead.
Well, as a resident of the United States for at least 14 years, it meant 14 consecutive years.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Defend the Constitution, and going back in tradition to when George Washington was sworn in as president, and he insisted on having an open Bible with his hand on the Bible when he swore to uphold the Constitution and certainly to defend the Constitution, and then ended with "So help me God." But where was his hand? What verses was it pointing to when he made that declaration?
Well, it was open to the book of Deuteronomy, which is the book of the law. Actually, Deuteronomy literally means second law. It was a second law giving as the people were preparing to enter the promised land. And it was open to chapters 27 and 28. And if you go look at those two chapters, there's a long list of blessings for the nation that obeys God's law. Blessed will be in the country, blessed will be in the city, blessed will be your family, and you'll be productive, have a lot of children, and so on. All the blessings of a nation that obeys God's law. And the converse, the other chapter, then deals with the curses. Cursed is the nation that disobeys God's law. Cursed in the country, and cursed in the city, and cursed in your family, and on the list of curses go. And Washington, consciously then, was thinking of his oath and thinking of the founding of the Union under the Constitution, that is, as each state joined the Union, this new Union was formed. He was thinking consciously that if our country obeys God's law, we will be blessed. And if he as president obeyed God's law and enforced God's law and executed God's law, we would be blessed. But if we did not, we as a nation would be cursed. And he, in his famous farewell address, spoke of that, the indispensable support to liberty, the indispensable support to this constitutional republic was religion, by which he meant Christianity, religion and morality, which is morality is basically obeying the law of God in your own life personally, as states and as federal government, obeying the law of God. And so, very interesting that I haven't seen, perhaps there is other examples, but I haven't seen since then any president swear an oath on an open Bible. They're always a closed Bible, which I'm glad they're using a Bible because it indicates that they believe this is the supreme law, which is why Keith Ellison, the congressman who swore with his hand on the Koran, I believe should have been immediately removed from office. That you can't swear on the Koran, because to put your hand on the Koran is to say the Koran is the supreme law of the land, not the Bible. Our founders knew that the Bible is the supreme law. If you have the Koran, well, you'll have people who steal and they'll have their hands chopped off. That's what the Koran says to do. And, I mean, on and on the list goes of Sharia law that we would recognize very clearly is unjust. It's unjust because it does not comport at all with God's law given to us in His Word, the Bible. Well, that oath is very important, and I was amazed to see that our current president, although I don't believe he's legitimate, he stumbled over that oath. You could say it wasn't his fault exactly. It was the Chief Justice who did not know the oath well enough that when he administered the oath to Obama, he stumbled over the word faithful. He misplaced the word faithful, like he forgot it, and then later he tried to insert it where it didn't belong and so forth. But I find it very ironic that the word faithful was the word that was bungled in the public oath-taking, because that is exactly what is lacking in the current resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. He is not faithfully defending. He is not faithfully protecting. He is certainly not faithfully preserving the Constitution. He's doing the exact opposite. He's doing everything to destroy it completely. And so, very interesting that he stumbled over the word faithful. Later, I understand, the next day, just to kind of cover their tracks and so that nobody would accuse them of not legitimately being president because he didn't swear the oath correctly, they did another private oath-taking in the White House map room without any press or photographers. I guess there was a White House photographer for it or whatever.
But they also did not have a Bible when they took the oath the second time. Go ahead.
very, very telling. They did not swear on the Bible because Obama, he doesn't believe the Bible, or at least he doesn't believe the Bible applies to him, and the Bible's law applies to a civil government. Because when you study God's law, it's very clear what civil government is to be all about. It's to be about justice. Justice is the first job of civil government. The second job is to defend the borders, neither of which the Obama administration is doing. And they're not alone in that, but they are culpable of having violated God's law and should be removed from office for having violated their oath of office, even if it isn't a crime in the technical sense of the word. Having violated the oath of office, Obama should be impeached. I know there are a group of people calling for his impeachment. I pray that they're able to gather a widespread movement that will succeed in removing him from office.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I guess this evening, Pastor David Whitney, and we are not going to be taking any calls this evening, at least for the first hour. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, Pastor Whitney, you go right ahead.
That's a great song, and God does bless us when we obey His law. The Scripture says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And the converse, of course, is cursed is the nation whose God is any other idol than the Lord God Himself. Well, moving from Section 1 of Article 2 to Section 2, this deals with the powers and the duties of the President. The first part of that section talks about him as the Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy. And the state militias, when they're called into federal service, a very important qualification there, he is not the commander-in-chief of the militias until they are called into federal service, and they are only called into federal service, as we saw when we dealt with Article 1, only called into federal service when there is an actual declaration of war. Only then are the state militias to be called up to federal service, and only then does he become the commander-in-chief of the Army. He's still the commander-in-chief of the Navy because the Navy is not to be called up at an ongoing military function. Well, as most of your listeners probably know, the last time Congress actually declared war was World War II, which means since World War II, all the other police actions, Korea, Vietnam, whatever you want to call those things, they're all unconstitutional. They're all a violation of the law. And in a sense, had the governors of our country had the guts, had the wherewithal to understand the Constitution themselves, they could have refused to allow any one of their boys, any one of their state militia, to be federalized, to be called up, and to be forced to go to war. So the draft, all during Vietnam era, that draft was unconstitutional, completely unconstitutional. The federal government cannot force the state militias into federal service in the Army until there is a declaration of war, and only until there's a declaration of war. So, if there is a declaration of war, we see that there's a check and balance here in terms of that war power that Congress has to declare war. The President then is the Commander-in-Chief, but he can only be Commander-in-Chief once this declaration of war is declared. Before that, the states, particularly their governors, who are the Commander-in-Chief of their state militias, the governors and the states have control over the military force of the nation. And our founders designed this because they feared a standing army, and they declared very, very clearly they did not want a standing army. They saw standing armies as a danger to liberty, a grave danger to liberty. And they, of course, had experienced the brutality and the viciousness of an empire army, a standing army of King George III, those lobster backs, as they were often called.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is, of course, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. We're talking about the Constitution. We're talking about the fact that if our nation is to go to war, it has to be a declared war. We haven't declared war since the Second World War. We've had a lot of police actions out there. But the draft was certainly unconstitutional when we were not legally at war. And only Congress can declare war, unfortunately. There are those who want America to become an empire. In fact, that has always been the plan, not of the American people, not of the Founding Fathers, but certainly of the small little clique that had gained control of our government and gained control during the Second World War. And we can call them the Council on Foreign Relations or the Bilderbergers, but there's a myriad of secret and semi-secret organizations working out there, bound together by a common desire. We call it globalism. They want a one-world government, and they're using the financial and military power of the United States to bring it about. And that is why we have our troops stationed in 130 nations. That is why we spend more money for our military than all the other nations in the world put together. So before we go on, David, I want you to go ahead and tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the Institute, what will happen when they get in touch, and give them, of course, your website. Go right ahead.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. We have put together what we call a host kit because we know it's sort of intimidating for people to think about teaching others the Constitution. Well, this host kit does it for you. Professor John Eismo, constitutional law professor, teaches in 12 half-hour lectures, David Barton in two additional lectures. There's a student notebook that gives a detailed outline of the entire series of lectures as well as test questions for each of those lectures. Everything that is needed by the student, supplemental readings, the Bastiat's excellent little book, The Law, that every American ought to read to understand what is legitimate government taxation and what's, as he aptly calls, a legalized plunder, the government stealing from the people. And that's primarily what we have taking place in our country today. Anyway, all of that's in the student manual. Then there's a host manual describing how to conduct the class, giving answers to all the test questions. So there's a turnkey way in which you can take material, put on a class with a group of people. We have people in churches. There's a church out in Springfield that's got over 100 people in their class and encouraged to hear that. And there's some churches that I'm aware of elsewhere around the country that have large classes and growing classes. And as people take these classes, Dr. Stan, they get excited because they realize, oh, I don't have to be a constitutional attorney, or I don't have to go to law school to understand the Constitution. The average citizen can comprehend the words and what they meant when our founders penned them and what it means to restore the Republic. And the thing that's so heartening to me right now, Dr. Stan, is I'm talking to a number of classes around the country that are graduating. As they're graduating, their students are excited, and those students are purchasing host kits because they're planning to conduct their own class. That's one of the things we tell people when they graduate. You are now qualified to conduct a class and help other people understand this. And so we see a grass fire growing here, and it's a very encouraging thing. And it's sad to say that it's because of the terrible abomination administration that brings it on. But the darker it gets, the brighter the few lights that are shining in our country shine. So people can get our host kit by going to our website. That website for Institute on the Constitution is iotconline.com. Institute on the Constitution's website, again, is iotconline.com. At the top of the page there, you'll see a button you can click to go to the host kit, get a description there, and you can place an order for the host kit there. I know some people prefer to do that by phone, and so our toll-free number at Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number again for Institute on the Constitution. That's 866-730-9796. And I encourage people to also look at our web store there. There's all sorts of materials available to help you understand various aspects and books and DVDs and audio CDs, many resources to help a citizen understand the truth of what our founders created and how we can restore it. And I wouldn't be doing this, Dr. Stan, if I didn't believe it is still possible to restore our constitutional republic. Indeed, the hour is late, but it is not too late if citizens will rise up, and the first thing they must do is educate themselves. And, I've been involved in the Tea Parties and speaking at Tea Parties here in Maryland, and one of the things I've seen in some of what's taken place, not all, but some of what's taken place, is there's great enthusiasm and great fervor and great passion, but without an understanding of the Constitution, that passion can often be misdirected into things like, let's call for a constitutional convention. You know, that we'll share later why that is a bad idea, but I love the fervor, and I pray that it's turned into a drive to get educated about the Constitution, and everybody can do this. Everybody can get a host kit and grab a group of people together in their church or in their community, have them even meet in their own you know, family room at home or whatever. You can take a group of people, and if you were to multiply yourself by gathering, you know, even 6 to 12 people this year, and you were to educate them, and they were to go out, and they were to educate another 6 to 12 people, and they were to, you know, the multiplication factor, we'd be reaching millions of people in a very short time. It is doable.
And I think we are, and I know you're reaching more people than ever before. You're not hearing about this. You see those people who want a dictatorship. The last thing they want is for the average American to realize that there is a growing awareness that we are a republic, that we have been dumbed down in our schools and our universities, that there is an organized effort to keep the American people from understanding what the Constitution says, and that we have an awful lot of people who've sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution, to defend it from all enemies, foreign and domestic, and yet they themselves are traitors to our Constitution, the enemies of the Constitution that they've sworn to uphold. And more people are beginning to understand. Our government's been taken over by people who don't believe in the Constitution. It is the law of our land. And I love my government, but I dislike intensely the wicked people who have usurped that control. We have an invisible government that has usurped control and is using that power to pursue their goal, which, of course, is the New World Order, the New World Financial System, the New World Religion. In other words, they have to destroy Christianity, which is, of course, why they're bringing the Muslims in, why they took God and prayer out of our schools, why it's all right to pray to Allah in our schools, but don't you dare ever mention the word of the God of the Bible, the name of the God of the Bible. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a growing movement, and it's exciting to be part of it. Well, certainly, our guest, David Whitney, go right ahead, David.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. And, you know, one of the exciting things is I see people beginning to strategize, because, I mean, once you get the education, then you need to begin to take action. And we, in our 12th lecture, talk about the actions you can take, but exciting to see some taking action, recognizing that if they, over time, cultivate enough people in their area, they can actually take control of the central committee of their party. Either party, really, it doesn't matter. Both parties are not a dime's worth of difference. But they can take control of the central committee such that they will only allow constitutional candidates to rise in their particular district. They can do that on a small district, and then it expands, and ultimately, if enough districts in the state have central committees that will only permit constitutional candidates to run for office, then you can actually see that a change take place in the state house of that state, as only constitutionalists are going to the state house. And then ultimately, as you take over congressional districts, you can likewise refuse to allow anyone to run for office for Congress or Senate unless they are constitutionalists. So there's a way in which you, as an average citizen, by educating people in your circle, starts local, it starts small, but it builds from there and grows and grows, and it's exciting to see that strategy beginning to be worked out in some of the states as they have cultivated the ground over a number of years in teaching the course again and again and again to an ever-widening circle of people.
And we've got a number of excellent candidates running next year. Senator Randy Brogdon running for governor there in Oklahoma. Judge Roy Moore running for governor in Alabama. Alan Quist is talking about running for governor up there in Minnesota. And
Congressman
Michelle Bachmann comes from there. All of these people need our help. There are people who believe in the Constitution who are going to be running this next year. And we need to have the people who will stand behind them. You can't change everything in Washington, D.C., but you can begin to organize in your individual precincts and certainly in your congressional district. And don't look to somebody else to do it. If it needs to be done, you do it. And if you can find somebody better, you follow them. And if not, then you pick up the mantle of leadership. If you care about freedom, if you care about the future, if you care about your family and generations yet unborn. Go right ahead,
yes,
David.
We encourage the Chief Justice Roy Moore has endorsed our course and encouraged people to take our course. Another friend of ours that is a constitutionalist and understands these principles is Ray McBerry, who's running for governor in Georgia and doing very well in the Republican Party there, and he may well win the primary race for the position in terms of Republican Party for governor. So anyway, there's encouraging things happening all over the country, and as Americans wake up to the problem and recognize that it's a violation of the Constitution is the source of the problem, then we could see our nation turning in the right direction towards a restoration of our constitutional republic. Well, going back to the whole issue of war and Commander-in-Chief, the idea was that the president did not have all the military power. It was shared power between Congress and the state governors, and it wasn't all his. And, for example, Congress is the one that makes the basic rules for the armed forces. It's known as the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That's the job of Congress. There was all this great brouhaha during, you know, Clinton's regime, and it's come back again, the don't ask, don't tell thing. And everybody was looking to the president to determine this. Well, that's not his job. In fact, he can't do a thing about that. That's Congress's job, writing the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and they had made that decision. Basically, Clinton and others were trying to undo and take away the rightful power, the constitutional power that Congress had to make that decision and grab it for the executive branch unconstitutionally and a violation of the separation of powers. Now, when the armed forces through the militias are called up to federal service, the president gives day-to-day orders and the specific regulations, but doesn't make the overall basic rules for the armed forces. That's Congress's job. And until the state militias are called up to federal service, they're completely under state control. In fact, the state even appoints all the officers of the lower grade. It doesn't appoint generals, but all the lower officers are appointed by the state through its militia structure. Now, all of this has been kind of challenged in a number of different ways. One of those was the War Powers Resolution of 1973. And in 1973, there was an attempt in this War Powers Resolution to kind of define this sharing of power. And basically, the structure that they set into motion said that the president didn't need a declaration of war to commit troops, to put them in harm's way, for 60 days. And then if in that 60 days Congress did not declare war, then he had to withdraw the troops, and they gave him an additional 30 days to withdraw the troops safely so that it could be done without loss of life or at least minimizing the loss of life. So basically the War Powers Resolution said that the president had 90 days in which to engage troops in war without a declaration of war. And the idea here was, well, there might be some emergency and, you know, somehow they can't get Congress to act quickly enough or whatever, but I think that's a bad idea, Dr. Stan. I think it's a violation of the separation of powers that was designed by our founders on purpose. They wanted to prevent the president from just saying, oh, I'm going to send the troops over there and we're going to, you know, start fighting on, you know, because once you do that, the difficulty for the American people is they back their troops, their sons that are out there fighting, and nobody wants to say, they're wrong. Well, because they're in harm's way. We want to support them. And so the knee-jerk reaction of the American people is once the troops are committed in anywhere, it's like we need to back them. We need to support them. We need to rally around them, which is right, which is why our founders structured it such that that cannot happen. Troops cannot be committed on the ground anywhere until there's a declaration of war. So I'm of the opinion that this War Powers Resolution in 1973 was really a violation of our Constitution and something that should be done away with in the restoration of the proper separation of powers, particularly powers regarding war. And as you said, all these wars and police actions, they're all unconstitutional since World War II. We've expended billions upon billions and much blood has been shed unjustly and unconstitutionally. It shouldn't be. When you deviate from the pattern and the structure by which it's very difficult to go to war, what happens is you wind up going to war all the time. Just consider this. This war on terror that we're supposedly in right now, we've been in this war on terror longer than we fought World War II. Longer than we fought World War II. We've been at war for long. It's crazy.
Well, it's not only crazy, it's treasonous. People have to understand. They said, well, you know, we're fighting the terrorists. Well, ladies and gentlemen, supposedly we're fighting the Al-Qaeda, but Al-Qaeda was an offshoot of the American effort to recruit the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets in the 1980s. The Taliban were trained using American textbooks. The encouraged this radical form of Islam, which of course had been dormant for a long time. Anybody who doubts that, you can simply call us and ask for a copy of the article. Oh, the ABCs of Jihad appeared in the Washington Post, telling how the United States had provided the textbooks, $51 million, textbooks that encourage this radical form of Islam. We financed the Taliban right up to the very day of the attack on the World Trade Center. And, of course, then they continued getting money from Saudi Arabia, our good friends. They continued getting money from our good friends in Pakistan. In fact, we financed Pakistan, that financed both the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. We financed the Pakistani government, that financed their ISI military that's funding the people who are killing our boys. Now, that may seem a little incongruous, but this is exactly what happened in Vietnam, where we funded the Russians, who funded the North Vietnamese, who funded the Viet Cong that killed our boys. Ladies and gentlemen, it's deja vu all over again. It's the best enemies American tax dollars can buy. And people say that couldn't be true. And ladies and gentlemen, it is true. I mean, even the New York Times will admit that everybody knows that the Pakistani military intelligence is funding the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban who are killing our boys. But they keep saying, but something's got to be done. Can it be done? Listen, if we weren't providing the money, they would not be able to maintain their control there. Well, they say, oh, if they're getting the money from drugs, then why don't we simply destroy the opium crop? Oh, we couldn't do that. Well, why, of course, we'd alienate the farmers as if we're not alienating them now. David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, we have basically become an empire, and the
heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, you know, America is changing, but most of the changes that are taking place seem to be designed to take away our freedom. And what can you do to remedy the current situation? Well, you can become informed, and one of the best ways to become informed is to subscribe to Republic Magazine, because that magazine provides the information that's suppressed in most other news magazines. If you want to oppose the effort to establish a one-world government, if you want to preserve freedom here in the United States and throughout the world, I suggest you subscribe to Republic Magazine, and you can do that by calling 1-800-873-1620. That's 800-873-1620, or access their website at www.republicmagazine.com. That's republicmagazine.com. I suggest you get extra copies for your family and your friends.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.
The Constitution, if you hope to remain free. So you're going to hear it over and over again, but we want you, if you possibly can, to get a kit and start putting these programs on. They're being instilled and installed all across America, and you'll never hear about this from the shills that the government has planted in the conservative movement, the church, conservative churches. Believe me, all of our organizations are infiltrated. You can't really trust, I don't know, maybe one, at the most two of the organizations that are out there, nationwide organizations, where I really trust that they're going to tell you the truth. So I've been at this for 47 years. I've seen them infiltrated over and over and over again. So understand, we're in real trouble. This is a spiritual battle. The most powerful people in the world are aligned against us, and you've got to become involved. And if not, then, of course, you will lose your freedom. Well, this is the time I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will decide right now you're going to become involved. If you would like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'd love to hear from you. One of the things you could do is to buy a case, a pre-publication case of Brotherhood of Darkness, my book, which explains the spiritual forces behind the political parties and the various organizations that rule our nation today. Behind the political parties, back of everything, there are powerful political forces. Powerful spiritual forces. So if you'd like to get a case of those books, 60 copies for suggested a gift of about $149.95. And remember, the book ordinarily sells for $12.95, but you can sell the books, do whatever you want to. They'll be costing you about $2, $2.50 each. Once we have the full contingent of subscriptions, why the offer will close until the books are gone. So if you'd like to get a full case of Brotherhood of Darkness, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, that's 1-800-544-8927. You'll certainly want to listen to our 4-CD set on the phony swine flu epidemic. And it is phony. And the epidemic has peaked out. And the fact that the president has declared this a national emergency is simply to frighten you into taking what is a potentially dangerous vaccine for you or your children, because, of course, many, many people cannot handle the mercury that's in the vaccines, and they know that. And we have the information. We reproduced the Simpson Wood Report, the top secret CDC report that they don't want the American people to see. We have it. We offer it. We also have, of course, the Congressional Record Report, posted in 2003, totally blocked out by the media. We, of course, have the book, Are Vaccines Safe and Effective? And, of course, we have the vaccine update. It's for CD set. Vaccine Update 2009. You need to get the DVD by Dr. David Aob, entitled Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Program. Russell Blaylock's excellent DVD, Vaccines and Brain Development, and all the other material, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. And if you really want to understand the spiritual component of what's going on, you need to hear my talk on the Forbidden Secret, my talk on the Financial Armageddon, going into the spiritual forces that have destroyed our economy and intend to destroy our nation. And believe me, they're going to destroy the value of the currency. They're going to impoverish our people. And if you're not involved, you've got nobody to blame but yourself. If you are involved, why? Then you can join the growing army of people across America, intent upon preserving the freedom we inherited for generations yet unborn. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Federer. And certainly Bill's one of my favorite guests. He's a writer, prolific writer. We carry a number of his books. But, well, what are we going to be talking about tonight, William?
Well, how to set up a totalitarian government.
All right, fine. Well, I think that it shouldn't be too hard to figure that out. All we have to do is see what's going on in America today, as our leaders, of course, are simply swear to uphold the Constitution and then do everything they can to undermine it and to say, oh, it's all in the name of helping the people. We're just here to help the people. Well, you pick up the story, Bill.
Well, there's two type of governments in the world, concentrated power and separated power. And for most of world history, power was concentrated. There's only been about 6,000 years of recorded human history. Now, that sounds like a lot, but really that's only 60 people living 100 years each back-to-back, and you're all the way back to the very beginning of recorded human history. Now, evolution tries to say man's been around for millions of years, but as far as human beings writing human records, it goes back to about 3 or 4,000 B.C. to Egyptian hieroglyphics and Sumerian cuneiform on clay tablets. And so it's really a fairly short amount of time when you think of it from that perspective. Now, during that 6,000 years from the beginning to now, empires have risen and empires have fallen, empires have risen and empires have fallen. There seems to always have been a quest for global domination. And the first empire that is spoken of in the Bible is the Tower of Babel. And Woodrow Wilson, in 1924, he said, "The history of government on this earth has almost been entirely a history of rule of force held in the hands of a very few. Under our Constitution, America committed itself to power in the hands of the people." So we go again, the concentrated power and separated power. Ronald Reagan said, "Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another." In this country of ours took place the greatest revolution that has ever taken place in world history. He goes on to explain how we took power and put it in the hands of the people. Now, it's interesting that the Bible talks about civilization, human civilization, originating in Mesopotamia with the Tower of Babel and so forth. But that is where the first Sumerian cuneiform was, in the Mesopotamian Valley around 3000 B.C. And then around 3000 B.C. is also around when the first Egyptian buildings and monuments and so forth were being built. About the same time as when China, the first dynasties over there began to appear, and as well as the Indus Valley. And, of course, from the biblical account, they were all scattered from the Tower of Babel, and they all went to the different areas of the world. About 2300 B.C. was the Akkadians, and then about 1700 B.C. was the Babylonians. And that's about the time when the children of Israel came out of Egypt. About 1300 B.C. was the Hittite Empire, which is around where Turkey is today. And people are familiar with the Battle of Troy, Helen of Troy, and the face that launched a thousand ships and everything. Well, that was about 1250 B.C. Skipping over the ocean, you have the Olmec civilization in Mexico around 1200 B.C. And then Solomon's Temple, which was around 960 B.C. And I hear the music there, so I'll take a break here, but we're going through the history of human civilization and empires, but these empires always were controlled by the power in the hands of a few.
Hold. Go right ahead.
Well, to pick up with Solomon's Temple, and for this one glimmer in history, Israel was a world power. About 700 B.C. was Sennacherib with the Assyrian Empire. He conquered and took the 10 northern tribes of Israel away captive. And then about 630 B.C. is Nebuchadnezzar with the Babylonian Empire. And then the Persian Empire, which took over that, Darius the Mede. And then the Greek Empire around 400 B.C. It began to attain international prominence. And, of course, 334 B.C. was Alexander the Great, the 19-year-old guy that took over his dad's army. And by the time he was 30, he had conquered the entire known world and died at 33 in a drunken stupor. His empire, Alexander the Great's empire, was divided into four. The Ptolemies took Egypt, and then Persia, which was a huge area that went almost over to China, and then what's called Seleucia, which is around Turkey and Macedonia, and then Greece. And those were the four empires. India had a thriving empire. Then the Roman Republic, about 280 B.C. And the Roman Republic was turned into the empire by Julius Caesar. They fought the Carthage Empire of North Africa with Hannibal. And then 27 B.C. is when Julius Caesar turned the Roman Republic into the Roman Empire, and he took total control. And then, of course, 27 years into that was when Jesus was born. And that's when calendars changed from B.C. to A.D. And all records on Earth today are dated according to the birth of Christ. Sort of interesting that if you go over to the Holy Land or you read some archaeological things, they'll say B.C.E. and C.E., which stands for Before Common Era and Common Era. That's because they don't want to say before Christ, because they'd have to acknowledge that Jesus was the Christ. And but the irony is that when did it change from before Common Era to Common Era? Well, Jesus. So they just can't get away from the fact that Jesus changed world history. And anyway, then there was the persecution of the Christians in the early Roman Empire, and then, of course, across the ocean, the Mayan civilization was going on around 250 A.D., and India had its Gupta Empire, and they invented the concept of zero. Over in China, they had the Han Empire.
Hold that thought, Bill. Of course, Bill is just going through the background of all the great empires of the world. And certainly, of course, the world changed when Christ was born. And as we date our calendars from the date of Christ was born, because he was the dividing line between the B.C. and A.D. For city, many of the people, like the Jews, they see, they refer to the city before the Common Era of B.C. and after the Common Era, the C.E. But they will not acknowledge that Christ is the dividing line. But Christ is the dividing line for everything. And so you had your pre-Christian empires, your post-Christian empires, certainly the Roman Empire formed in, I think it was about 27 B.C. by Julius Caesar, and then, of course, by the time Christ was born, Augustine was the emperor of Rome. And then, of course, going on from there, where we see the persecution of the Christians in the Roman Empire, and so pick up the story, Bill.
Well, we're tracing the quest for global power, and it's going through the 6,000 years here. Around 200 A.D. Is when the Great Wall in China began to completed. And what happened was is the Mongols then were hindered in their efforts to attack China. And so the Mongols, instead of attacking east, they attacked west, and that set off a domino effect, where they would displace one tribe who would move further west, which would displace another tribe that would move further west, and they would displace the next tribe. And lo and behold, they began to bump over the Rhine River into the Roman Empire. And that's when all these different tribes began to invade the Roman Empire. The Visigoths and Ostrogoths, which means the East Germans and the West Germans and the Lombards, and the Burgundians, and the Franks, and the Jutes, and the Angles, and the Saxons, and the Vandals, and eventually the Huns, all crossed into the Roman Empire. And Rome, which had been this huge world empire, had become top-heavy. It had a lot of debt, a lot of taxes. These different tribes were basically like illegal immigrants, and they would come across slowly and learn the Latin language, but then they came across so fast they kept their own languages, and that developed into the languages of German, French, and English, and Spanish, and so forth. One of the tribes crossed into North Africa and captured the grain fields, and that brought Rome to its knees because it didn't have the grain to fight back. And sort of like today, we've outsourced all our factories to China, and if China decides to take Taiwan and we say, no, you can't have it, all they have to do is keep their ships back for 3 months, and all of our Walmart shelves will be empty, and our entire retail industry will grind to a halt, and everybody will cry at government, just give them Taiwan to get the economy going again. And that's sort of the way Rome was when the Vandals captured North Africa. And then Rome began to have terrorist attacks with Attila the Hun, and he, in just a short time, conquered a huge area of from the Black Sea and the steppes over Mongolia to Eastern Europe. And finally Rome fell in 476 A.D. And then the Byzantine Empire took over the Eastern Roman Empire. And then it was invaded by the Muslims. And I wrote a whole book on Muhammad and his followers and all the areas they conquered. But they started in Arabia, and then they conquered all of North Africa. There used to be 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa. Then they crossed the Strait of Gibraltar into Spain, and in 10 years conquered all of Spain. They were finally stopped just outside of Paris at the Battle of Tours. And then the Muslims conquered toward China, and they conquered the Holy Land, and they enslaved over 180 million Africans. And matter of fact, every slave brought to America was purchased at a Muslim slave market. And then we see the Frankish Empire, where Charles Martel, who had stopped the Muslims, his grandson was Charlemagne. And Charlemagne had this huge empire that went from the North Atlantic down to like almost Italy. And then, of course, you had the Vikings from around 800 to 1000 A.D. The Vikings reigned. They had these boats with these little short short keels, so they weren't very deep, and they could go up every single river in Europe. And so all these cities that were way far from the ocean, who thought they were safe, these boats would just come out. The Vikings would get off and kill and pillage, take the women and sail back to Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. But these women were mostly Christian, and they witnessed to their new pagan husbands, who, and they eventually got saved and became Christian, and that's when Sweden, Norway, and Denmark became Christian, and they stopped their Viking attacks. But then the Muslims began to invade the Byzantine Empire, and the Byzantine Empire today is Turkey, but this is back where all seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were, and the Byzantine Empire cries to the West for help, and the West sends help. It's called the Crusades. And they go on for about 200 years, and then they finally end, and then the Muslims conquer Constantinople. And once Constantinople falls, then the Europeans were looking for a new way to trade with India and China, and Columbus set sail west and ran into the Americas. And I know I'm sort of fast-forwarding through these different empires, but one thing that's in common with these empires is that they were all ruled by kings and monarchs and sultans and despots and Caesars and Kaisers. And you know, I could go on. Spain claimed all the New World after Columbus discovered it. And they had the saying that the sun never set on the Spanish Empire. And then they were followed by the Portuguese and the Dutch and the British with their empires. And British sort of consolidated the New World and became New England. And, of course, France had Canada, and the Louisiana Territory is New France. And then you had America. And America was unique because of the 3,000-mile ocean between us and our monarch, the King of England. We had this unique opportunity in history to experiment with self-government. And we made the people the king and the politicians the servants. Boy, what a change. Instead of those politicians being the royalty, and if you're friends with the politically correct king in power, then you're more equal, and if you were enemies of the king in power, you were less equal. We in America decided that the people were the king and the politicians were the servants. They were public servants. You hired them and they fired them. And that's where Ronald Reagan said, every other revolution, they simply exchanged one set of rulers for another. But here in America, we did something different. Now, a question I have to ask is, what is the most efficient form of government in the world? Well, actually, it's a monarchy. One person says it, it happens, or heads roll. It's very efficient. The problem is, if you're friends with one king and he dies and the next one takes over, he could hang you if he didn't like you. And so it was a situation where our founders designed a system of government to be inefficient on purpose. It was slow to making good changes, but thank God it was slow to making bad changes. In other words, our founders thought that change was bad. We've heard a whole lot of talk about change. Well, our founders hated change. They saw what would happen in Europe, that these monarchs on a whim could end your life. And so they decided to form a government that it took really long time. They had to go through the House, had to go through the Senate, had to go back and forth and get it ironed out. And then finally the president signed it, but then the Supreme Court could challenge it. And all these checks and balances. And one time Thomas Jefferson came back from France. He had been an ambassador over there at the same time that our U.S. Constitution was written over here. And the story is that Jefferson was talking to George Washington, and he asked him, why two houses, this bicameral legislature? It's so cumbersome. And Washington said, why do you pour your hot tea into the saucer and pour it back again before you drink it? And Jefferson said, well, to cool it. And Washington said, well, that's our point. He says, you just proved the importance of it. He says that instead of laws being passed in the passion of the moment and you have rapid change, he said, we designed it so that it cools the passions of the people by going from one house back to the other and back and forth, so that whatever's finally passed is truly a reflection of what the people want, not something that was passed in a crisis or in an emergency. And you see that our founders had this concept. Lord Acton in Britain worded it best. He said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the dilemma that they faced is that they were brilliant, our founding fathers. They understood that man was a sinful creature, and he had this selfish tendency. And they realized that you could have somebody on the street that would want to break into your house and steal and kill from you. And so the people needed to relinquish a little bit of their independence to create a government that could have a police force to protect them from this criminal. But on the other hand, if human beings can be subject to their sinful fallen nature, what happens if you get somebody in charge of the government that has yielded to the sinful fallen nature, and they want to rob and steal you and use the government power to do it? Well, in that case, the people need to retain enough power to keep the government in check. And so it's this balancing act where you give up power to create the government, but you retain power to control the government. Unfortunately, today, we're facing both of the attacks, but it seems to be more from the government perspective.
Well, remember those words of Thomas Jefferson. In matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down to mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And George John Locke had said it even better. That government governs best, that governs the least, because, you see, that's the road to freedom. Well, William, this is fascinating. Is this...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Power corrupts absolutely, that you could not give any group power to run the government or you'd end up with a tyranny. And so they set up the executive, judicial, and legislative branches of government to divide the power so that each one would act as a check on another one. But, of course, then there were other ideas, and, of course, some of them can be traced back to Plato in his Republic talked about, the ideal form of government would be where you had a philosopher king, and that philosopher king would certainly be honest, and so there'd be absolutely no way he would do anything to benefit himself. It would always be done for the people. It's always for the people. Oh, we're here for the people. And so this then laid out a concept. It has been pursued by a small group of people ever since then. What we need is an ideal government, a utopian government, with a world with a benevolent ruler. Well, the trouble is, where are you going to find somebody like that? So I'll let William pick the story up, but there are these two concepts. One, the American concept with the separation of powers, and then this other concept, well, what we really need is the philosopher king, Plato's a philosopher king. Well, go right ahead.
Well, and the Plato idea is basically what influenced the kings. Used that to justify their divine right of kings. They said, well, God chose me to be the king, and so my will must be God's will, and so they would be despots. A despot is somebody who has absolute and arbitrary power. Two A's, absolute and arbitrary. Absolute means the moment they say it, it's the law of the land, and arbitrary means you don't know what they're going to say next. They're not following any constitutional guideline track record, you know. And so that was the basis for communism, where they said, hey, centralize everything, and there's going to be some philosopher king, some people that are just smarter than everybody else, and they can make all the decisions. One of the quotes from Woodrow Wilson, he said, the history of liberty is the history of limitation on government power, not the increase of it. He said, when we resist the concentration of power, we are resisting the powers of death, because concentration of power always precedes the destruction of human liberties. And so back to America, we have this dilemma. The people have to give up enough power to create a government that can defend them from criminals on the street, but they have to retain enough power, because you might get a criminal in charge of the government, and he's going to use the power of government to rob and steal from you. And at the beginning of our country, those two branches were called the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. The Federalists were basically people like Washington and Adams and Hamilton, and they wanted a stronger central government so that we could have a navy that could defend us against the British and the French, so they needed to have taxes to support this. And that they were concerned about outside attack. Well, the Anti-Federalists were basically Jefferson and Madison and Monroe, and they wanted a weaker central government because they wanted to make sure we didn't have the repeat of the errors of these monarchs that had total control, where the King of England, for example, was the king of their country, the commander of their military, and the head of their church, the head of the Anglican Church. And so there was this dilemma of balancing power. Now, Our founders had this idea. John Adams put it this way. He said, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate for the government of any other. In other words, our government was designed to govern people who could govern themselves. And the more internal restraints the populace had, the less external restraints they needed. And so as long as you had a whole country where they were taught, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, they were taught there was a God looking over their shoulder that was going to hold them accountable for their actions. As long as you taught these things, then the people behaved very nice with very few laws.
And it's sort of the old idea that those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. So what you needed were people to be ruled by God. And, of course, then they would be able to have self-rule or self-government. It was the old idea, the Bible, the bayonet, which do you want? Well, for many years we had a moral nation, and I believe that's why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools and brought in evolution to destroy the children's faith in God. It's been very well done, very clever. There have always been those who wanted to centralize power among themselves. And of course, the people have forgotten the old adage that liberty and limited government are synonymous, and that tyranny and total government are synonymous, and tragically, we're moving towards, and rapidly, towards total government control today. Of course, that's Kate Smith singing God Bless America. And at one time, of course, lots of people talked about making that our national anthem. And it's a beautiful song, a simple song, but it expresses a very profound realization, and that is that our freedom comes from God. At one time, everybody knew that. That's why they took God in prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our school, because they wanted to destroy our belief in God. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is, of course, William Federer. And, Bill, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, get a list of the books you publish. Some of them we carry, some of them we don't. Should carry them all, but certainly Bill has a wonderful ministry, and he has a daily email he sends out. Tell people about how they can get in touch with you and your information.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Stan. My website is AmericanMinute.com. That's AmericanMinute.com. And I have a toll-free telephone number, 888-USA-WORD. That's 888-USA-WORD. And I've written about 16 books. One of them, America's God and Country, has sold over 500,000 copies. A book on the history of the U.S. and Islam called What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. And then another new one called Endangered Speeches, How the ACLU, IRS, and LBJ Threaten Extinction of Free Speech. I have a whole chapter in there on the foundation of the ACLU, founded to defend communists. Roger Baldwin, who started the ACLU, was a World War I draft dodger, spent a year in jail, and was against the government, and he defended those communist community organizers and communist infiltrators. But it's a fascinating book, and also people, if you go to the website, AmericanMinute.com, you can sign up for the free daily email called The American Minute. And it's something that happened on each date in American history, and it only takes a minute to read. That's the beauty of it.
All right, well, you go on with your story.
Well, Ronald Reagan said, the government that's big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take away everything you have. And so we see that there's basically two ways to set up a totalitarian government. One is you march in with an army and you kill those that resist. The second way is you bankrupt them into it. And before you think that's too strange, that's actually the way it happened in the Bible in Egypt with Joseph. Now, God in his providence had a plan behind that. But if you remember the story, in Egypt, they had 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. And Joseph knew about this in advance, and so during the 7 years of plenty, he stored up a whole lot of extra grain in the government barns. And then when the famine came, the first year of the famine, the people said, hey, bad economy, we're out of a job, we don't have money for food. Government, we'll give you our land, just give us food. And the second year of the famine, they said, look, a bad economy, we still hasn't turned around, we don't have money for food, we'll give you our cattle, give us food. Third year here, take our kids, and you know, fourth year here, take us. And what if you had the ability to create the famine? What if you were in charge of the government and you pushed through economic policies that bankrupted the country on purpose and put people out of job and put people out of work and put them out so they didn't have health care, they didn't have anything, and then they would turn to the government and say, government, the economy's bad. Please help us. And the government would say, oh, here, we're here to help you. And so basically people would surrender themselves to the government. Now, it's sort of the same way that a gang takes over a neighborhood. They can do it two ways. They can come in with guns and kill people that resist, or they can come in and give away free drugs. And push these drugs and get people hooked on them. And once the people are hooked on the drugs, they're at the mercy of the drug gang. And this is also sort of the way that Jefferson consulted William Henry Harrison on how to take land from the Indians. William Henry Harrison was the governor of the Indian Territory, the Indiana Territory, from which seven states were formed. Headquarters was in Vincennes, Indiana, and he later went on to become the ninth president. And Jefferson writes him a letter, and basically it says, you know, you can go in and take the land from the Indians, but that's difficult and not too good. But he says, be glad to see the influential individuals among them run in debt, because we observe that when these debts get beyond what the individuals can pay, they become willing to lop them off by a cessation of lands. So in other words, hey, an easy way to take land from the Indians is go out there and sell these Indian chiefs and the influential people among them all kinds of great stuff on credit and just let them run it up really, real, really high. And then all of a sudden when the day comes to pay it, they're going to say, all right, there's no way we can pay this back. And they will gladly give away their land to settle the debt. And I remember reading an article that Jack Kemp wrote years ago. I met him several times. He endorsed me when I ran for Congress. And Jack Kemp wrote about how, it was actually in Reader's Digest, and he said how that the American taxpayer is unknowingly financing globalism. He says that you pay your taxes, goes into the Treasury lends money to the World Bank. The World Bank, with no money of its own, I mean, it didn't create the money, the World Bank would go to these third world dictators in the Philippines and in Indonesia and all these different countries and go to the dictators and loan them money. And these dictators who were not used to handling these huge amounts of money would gladly take the money, but they would end up squandering it or putting it in Swiss bank accounts or, you know, splurging it on their families. And anyway, when the time came for the payment to be made, and the payment wasn't there, and the country still hadn't turned around economically, then these world bankers would say, okay, we're going to take your mining rights or your forest rights or your land rights or your mineral rights. We're going to take, you know, your assets of your country. And so the idea was that these globalists were using the World Bank, which had money borrowed from America, to basically do their extortion plans to take assets from all these other countries. And but this is the way that you can take over through debt. So you can take over through an army marching in and set up a totalitarian government, or you can just bankrupt them into it.
And it's very, very interesting what you're saying, Bill, because that's the story of John Perkins told in his book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and his job was to go into the countries and get them into debt. That's his whole purpose, his whole function. We have a series of interviews with him called Economic Hitman, but we still carry his book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and that's exactly what his job was, to get the countries into debt so that we could enslave them. Go right ahead.
And so let's look at Washington for a second. Here's George Washington. He was the first president of our brand new country. And he sort of understood that he was doing something absolutely unique in world history. That, and in his farewell address, he warns of dangers. Now, I love the anecdotal story that King George III was getting his portrait painted in England. And the portrait was an English citizen, but he had been born in America, and the painter's name was Benjamin West. And so while the portrait is being painted, King George III says, well, what do they say that this General Washington is planning on doing now that he has defeated the king's army? And Benjamin West replied, they say, Your Highness, that he will return to his farm. And the king stopped and said, if he does that, he truly will be the greatest man in the world. In other words, kings killed to get power, kings killed to keep power. Washington had the power, and he gave it up. And he did it twice. First time was when he commanded the army that defeated the British, and his army had not been paid for a year. Could you imagine fighting and risking your life and not being paid for a year? And so these soldiers came to Washington and said, look, declare yourself king, we'll back you. And Washington's response was to turn in his resignation and went back to Mount Vernon. And then later, he is the only president unanimously elected twice, and some said, hey, you're the only one we can agree on, just make yourself president for life. And Washington's response was to say, two terms is it, I'm going back to Mount Vernon. And he, and along with some of the others, founded what's called the Order of Cincinnatus. And Cincinnatus, during the Roman Republic era, was a farmer. And the Roman Republic was being invaded, and he left his plow in the field and organized the Roman army and won. And then, instead of being a Julius Caesar dictator, he just goes back to his farm when it's all over. And then when he's 80 years old, he does it a second time and goes back to his farm. And so that Order of Cincinnatus was sort of a popular thing that you did not covet power. It was a noble thing to give it up. And, of course, Cincinnati, Ohio is named after that. Anyway, so when Washington, as everybody's familiar with the Lord of the Rings movie, and everybody wanted that ring of power, you know, and there's Gandalf and all these people. Well, guess what? Washington, in a sense, had that ring of power twice, and he gave it up. And so when Washington's giving his farewell address, when he's finishing his second term as president, he's going to go back to Mount Vernon for the last time, the whole world held its breath. They really could not believe that this guy was going to go through with it. And so Washington felt that tug of the rubber band. He felt that, hey, look, when I'm gone, there's going to be this temptation for you to want to return back to the monarch situation. Sort of like a Samuel warning the children of Israel that, look, you really don't want a king, but this is probably what you're going to demand anyway. So here is Washington's farewell address. He says this, "And of fatal tendency to put in the place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority. They are likely in the course of time to become potent engines." Sort of an unusual use of the word engine. But he says, "They are likely in the course of time to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which lifted them to the unjust dominion." So it's sort of like you climb up the tower and you pull the ladder up behind you. I mean, they got up there into the government, and then they are enacting laws with ACORN and different things to prevent people from challenging. Sort of like Hugo Chavez got democratically elected in Venezuela, and then once he got in, he began to outlaw democracy. So here's Washington continues. He goes, "This leads at length to a more formal and permanent despotism." He said, "The disorders and miseries which result gradually incline the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual." Let me read that line again. "The disorders and miseries which result gradually incline the minds of men to seek security in the absolute power of an individual." Disorders and miseries. I'm going to get to that, back to that in a minute. And so he says, security in the absolute power of an individual, one person, a monarch. And this person, this individual, turns this disposition to his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty. Thus, the spirit of encroachment tends to consolidate the powers of all departments in one, and thus to create, whatever the form of government, a real despotism. Again, a despot is someone with absolute and arbitrary power. And then Washington concludes, "Let there be no change by usurpation. It is the customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed." Now, what's usurpation? Well, my grandparents grew up in Neosho, Missouri, which is near the Arkansas border. And a lot of these farms were really like hilly and, you know, I mean, and they had this thing called squatter's rights. So if you had, a whole bunch of acreage and some hillbilly family sets up a shanty on the corner of your property, and if they live there for 7 years and you don't find out about it and chase them off, guess what? They get squatter's rights to your property. They, it's sort of like a common law marriage. If if a woman lives with a guy for 7 years, even though she gets rights to the property. And so that's what usurpation is that if the government does stuff that it has no right doing, but it gets away with it for 7 years or a couple years, the people are used to the government now doing that, and they let the government do it. And so it's usurpation. They don't have the right to do it, but they just muscle their way and do it anyway, and then everybody's used to it, and so they get the rights. And we see this trend when I speak in schools. I mean, I've had 1,000 kids in the gymnasium, and I'm teaching them on the Constitution, and I think, well, how can I get this into their brain? And so I'll have the kids hold up a fist in one hand and say concentrated power. And then I have them hold up an open palm in the other hand with their fingers apart and say separated power. And then I go back to the fist again. I said, for most of world history, power was in the fist, the concentrated power of a king. But during our brief experiment, we've separated power into three branches, separated federal to state level. Then we tied up the federal government with 10 handcuffs we call the first 10 amendments. But after every crisis, we've seen a gradual reconcentration of power. In other words, it was great that Lincoln ended slavery, but in the process, he took a lot of rights away from the states and concentrated them in the hands of the federal government. It was great that Woodrow Wilson got us through World War I, but in the process, he concentrated power with the Federal Reserve and the federal income tax and wanted to concentrate power globally with the League of Nations. And it was great that Franklin Roosevelt got us through the Great Depression. Some say he extended it. But nevertheless, he concentrated power with his New Deal programs in the federal government. And he concentrated power by starting off creating the United Nations. And then you had Lyndon Johnson with his War on Poverty. And he concentrated power in the federal government with his socialist Great Society welfare state. And then even President Bush concentrated power with the War on Terror, Homeland Security, Patriot Act. I mean, usually it's a good short-term thing, but it has a bad long-term result. I mean, it was good that Lincoln ended slavery, you know, but it was good that we won World War II, you know. But for example, withholding from your paycheck, when did that start? Well, that was an emergency effort to get money to fight Hitler during World War II. It's called the pay-as-you-go tax. But once the war stopped, it didn't. And the government is still collecting withholding from paychecks. And so it's in times of crises that people relinquish power to the government. Once the crisis is passed, the government still has the concentrated power. It has all the cards, all the marbles, you know. Well, now all this concentrated power has been handed to this new president, and it's gone on an exponential curve. And the president's taking over banks, taking over car companies, wanting to take over life and death decisions of the health care of every person in the country. I mean, if you like the way Katrina was handled, you'll love nationalized health care. Then 30 czars that are unelected. This is a huge concentration of power. It's ironic that even Jefferson warned in the Declaration of Independence how the King of England was multiplying offices unto himself. So we've seen, we've gone through this trend of concentrated power to separated power to concentrated power. And a couple of philosophers that I don't know if I have time to get into, but Machiavelli and Hegel actually talked about how to go about creating crisis on purpose so that you can concentrate power.
It's my contention, those who've heard my talk on the financial Armageddon, that this whole thing, this whole financial collapse was contrived. I can prove it in a court of law. They know exactly what they're doing. The one thing is they don't want the American people to learn.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, you know, America is changing, but most of the changes that are taking place seem to be designed to take away our freedom. And what can you do to remedy the current situation? Well, you can become informed, and one of the best ways to become informed is to subscribe to Republic Magazine, because that magazine provides the information that's suppressed in most other news magazines. If you want to oppose the effort to establish a one-world government, if you want to preserve freedom here in the United States and throughout the world, I suggest you subscribe to Republic Magazine, and you can do that by calling 1-800-873-1620. That's 800-873-1620, or access their website at www.republicmagazine.com. That's republicmagazine.com. I suggest you get extra copies for your family and your friends.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
First community organizer, and it was certainly Barack Obama who adopted Saul Alinsky's techniques as he was working for ACORN. And of course, remember, Saul Alinsky dedicated his book, Rules for Radical, to the first radical, Lucifer. And this is all Luciferian, powerful spiritual forces behind what's going on today. And the president is well aware of the origin of the programs that he's instituting. Well, certainly if you want to understand what's going on today, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and read it. And we do hope many of you will want to get a case of the books and use this as a weapon to actually expose what's going on. And if you remember, you can get this book ordinarily. It would run at $12.95, but for a suggested gift of $2.50 a book, you can get 60 of them. You have to get a case. For a suggested gift of $149.95 for 6 books, you will have the best weapon you can possibly have to educate others about the truly spiritual battle we're engaged in today for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So certainly if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, we'll put your name on the list. As soon as we have the people signed up, the offer closes and you won't hear it again for a couple of years. But a wonderful way to get something that you can utilize to reach others. So again, at the Brotherhood of Darkness, you can get a full case of them. And call us at 1-800-544-8927. You need to get, of course, my talk on the financial Armageddon, on the forbidden secret, because there is a forbidden secret that has been handed down for thousands of years. And we're living at the most exciting times in history because this secret is being brought forward. In fact, it's covered to at least some extent in Rhonda Byrne's book, The Secret, or certainly in Brown's book, entitled The Lost Symbol. For the first time, this is being openly discussed. There is a force out there that you can tap into, and of course have tremendous power and wealth and fame. But we want to tell you what it's all about, and we want to caution you not to get involved with this. But we must understand what the enemy is, what the forces we oppose, and then we hope you'll join us in this epic struggle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And certainly, if you want to get my articles, they're up on the Internet, my 3 pamphlets on the occult hierarchy that rules the world. We hope you'll get my talk on the forbidden secret, the Brotherhood of Darkness, and the Financial Armageddon, my talk on world revolution. The move is on for a world government, certainly for a planned police state. The DVD is called The Planned Police State, an excellent syllabus for that, with all the documentation you need. We hope you'll get my talk on the planned population control or planned population reduction. That's planned population reduction. We hope, of course, that you'll help us get the information out. We hope that you'll join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Go to our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there on the Internet 9 hours a day and not get much accomplished. Encourage others to listen to our programs, to become educated, to help us get the word out on our Constitution, to help us get the word out on the secret societies working behind the scenes, intent upon destroying what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Nothing happening today is happening by accident. It's all been planned. They're going to destroy the value of our currency and impoverish our people. Again, our number 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your support. We appreciate your looking for the truth, because I'll tell you what, it's not easy to find. If you're watching television, what a joke. What a joke it is. And the stories that they're trying to get you to believe that, well, they were using their laptops. Would you go for that one? Since you didn't buy into the story that they were asleep, and then the second was that they were having an argument, let's try the old laptop story, and I got distracted. What we're talking about is the Northwest Airlines pilots. What are they thinking? I mean, are people that ignorant? Please tell me they're not. Please tell me they're not. Please tell me there's more than just the Power Hour listeners that get it with these stories. I am so pleased that we have listeners that understand what's happening, because you live in a world of incredible incredulity that makes you wonder, did I just hear that right? Is that what they're trying to get us to believe? Well, Power Hour gives you a break from all that nonsense. And by the way, CNN has now dropped to the last place in television viewing. Isn't it interesting? They've been giving us all this junk all this time, and now people are finally saying, I don't think so. Last in the cable news lineup. Well, good for them. They certainly deserve it. Well, in the news today, other than the Northwest Airlines pilot story, now, it's not because the guys missed the airport that we want to cover the story. It's what is the story that they're not telling you about how the guys missed the airport. That's what we need to talk about. Also, we've got to talk about Bernie Kerik. And why Bernie Kerik? This guy was New York Police Commissioner on the day of 9/11. He's got an interesting background and even a more interesting sort of future, unfortunately. Well, or fortunately, I don't know how you would look at that. But we're going to talk about who Bernie Kerik is and why this guy seems to be a bit of a problem. At least for those that maybe don't want him to talk, that is. A federal jury, on a sad note, has found a guest of the Power Hour guilty. That's right. An individual who has been on the Power Hour found guilty, and we'll talk about it, in serving quite a sentence, unfortunately. FEMA Administrator and Missouri Governor Nixon discuss importance of faith-based and community organization partnerships during disaster response. Let me give you a clue. It involves churches and FEMA. Uh-huh. Right here in the old state of Missouri. Remember, there is a national emergency that is occurring right now. We are involved in a national emergency for swine flu. The story is continuing to develop as to why we don't have the swine flu vaccine. At first it was, oh, there's going to be plenty, because we've been working on it for years now. We've had plenty of time now. We've got five companies. they will all be able to prepare enough. You'll have enough. Get ready when it comes to a town near you. Then it was, we don't have enough, we don't have enough. Then it was, oh yeah, don't worry about it, there will be plenty. Some people will even get two, like the children. Now it's back to, we don't have enough, we don't have enough. Only 10% of the swine flu vaccine is available, therefore we are creating panic. They, the government, are creating panic. Well, there's more to the story. Why is the swine flu vaccine not available? We'll tell you that and what their plan is. If you didn't see the pictures yesterday, check it out. The bombing that occurred in Iraq. I don't want you to lose sight of that story because that is the almost exact picture of what happened in Oklahoma City, at the Oklahoma City bombing, in which the faces of the buildings were all blown out. And, of course, they know that it was two guys in two cars.